Ave,
and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode LXXV, Flying Too Close to the Sun. Commodus wasn't the most attentive emperor to rule Rome, preferring to dedicate his time to indulging his vices. Inevitably, someone will step forward and start calling the shots, because hey, someone has to keep the grain flowing. Unfortunately, this doesn't end well for these men, and today we'll take a closer look at their fate. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
So after the conspiracy against Commodus, he becomes more and more paranoid and withdraws, and that means it leaves the field open for various people to fulfill the position of being in charge, because he's not interested in taking that role, being publicly at the forefront of Roman rule. So there's an obvious vacuum there, and this is a situation we've seen before. I would say an obvious parallel is way back with Tiberius when he went off to Capri.
And Sejanus put his hand up and stepped into those boots.
Yeah, well, the people who decide to walk into Commodus's boots should have known it never ends well. Sejanus was executed, and most of these people are going to come a cropper too.
Mm.
So Commodus is off enjoying himself, and the first person to attempt to take over governing Rome is the Praetorian prefect, who's called Sextus Ticidius Perenis.
So when you say take over, it's a stealth, more natural kind of transition of there's a power vacuum.
Yes, and the Praetorian prefect often has a lot of power in that situation because they are in charge of looking after the emperor, of protecting the emperor.
Mm.
Therefore, they're one of the people in charge of access to the emperor. So okay. They are a natural person. And of course, they're in a military role, and the military have a lot of authority that they can step into that.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's nearly always a very dangerous thing to do. So you have to play it well. Sort of a surrogate position of power.
The impression that I get about Perenis is that he is actually somebody who is not incompetent.
Yes, he's a rare character who is given credit for not being ambitious. So there's so few of these people that ancient historians tend to point them out when they come up. So Dio's in favour of Perenis. Dio did better under the rule of Perenis, and the senators in general felt more secure than they had under Commodus, and they would under subsequent surrogates for Commodus.
Mm.
So Dio says that privately he never strove in the least for either fame or wealth, but lived a most incorruptible and temperate life. And as for Commodus and his imperial office, he guarded them in complete security. That's Dio, book 73, that's the Commodus book, chapter 10.1. And what he's saying there is that really Perenis is doing this balancing act. He's keeping Commodus safe, he's not betraying him. But he's also somebody who can't be bribed.
Yeah.
So he doesn't live a life of luxury himself. He actually is interested in keeping Rome balanced. That's at least Dio's impression.
Sure.
Clearly, yeah, yeah. I think to me that means the Senate was happy under Perenis. However, the version we get from the Historia Augusta, which tends to play on the more sensational aspects, of course, says that Perenis was guilty of corrupting the young emperor and seizing the property of the many people whom he condemned. So the exact opposite, really, that he was out for his own gain and that he wanted to make money out of this position. And that is perhaps backed up by another historian called Herodian, who says that Perenis had an uncontrollable desire for money.
Mm.
Now, the problem with the Historia Augusta we've gone on and on and on about.
Yeah, yeah, but we haven't gone on and on and on and about Herodian.
No, who's also seen as problematic. He's a historian from the Roman East who wrote a history of Rome after Marcus Aurelius, so starting with Commodus, really. He's alive in the 3rd century, and the general consensus is that he's slightly more reliable on the 3rd century than the 2nd century.
Okay.
So we kind of have to take Herodian with a pinch of salt, according to modern scholars of ancient history.
And was he potentially using Dio as a basis for what he's writing?
He surely would have been aware of Dio. In part, Herodian looks very close to Dio, down to the word. They're both writing in Greek. So he's clearly lifting bits of Dio.
Mm.
And what that means, I suppose, from our point of view, in very broad brushstrokes, is that Dio is more reliable. He's closer to the events. He seems to be less biased, at least in this situation, despite being very anti-Commodus.
Mm.
And whatever is accurate in Herodian is probably coming from Dio anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So we tend not to use Herodian so widely for this period.
But considering that what we do have of Dio from this period is Epitomed.
It is very... You got to hang that word.
All Epitomed off, yeah. Yeah. then, yes, I usually don't have the hang of that word, but I am a very good podcast editor. Considering that what we do have of Dio is Epitomed, then what is in Herodian could actually have originally been from Dio and we've just lost it, so...
That is true. There are some books of Dio that are so heavily summarized that, you know, it's six paragraphs. That's not true of book 73. It's quite extensive, but it is Epitome. So you're quite right that where there are things in Herodian, which don't exist at all in Dio, they might have been there originally in Dio and they've slipped out. So it is possible that Herodian could be used to stick Dio back together.
And we will be coming to that a bit later. So while Perennis is in de facto charge of Rome, what is Commodus up to during this time?
Well, all of our sources agree that he's off enjoying himself.
Mm.
I love the phrase from the Historia Augusta that he's living in orgiastic abandonment. And the full quote is, he persuaded Commodus to free himself for a life of pleasure while he, Perennis, would devote himself to the administration. So you go and enjoy yourself while I just take care of business, he says. And this Commodus gladly accepted. Under this agreement, therefore, Commodus began a life of orgiastic abandonment in the palace and banquets and baths. So we get this idea that Commodus is just off being a playboy, and especially that he's taking part in the games and that he is a typical bad emperor in that he's not interested in the day-to-day business of empire at all, nor indeed in going out and extending the empire or looking after it or warfare in any fashion. So he's kind of abandoned himself to his own pleasure.
So it's good to be the king.
Dio agrees with that, and he puts stress on the games aspect. So he says Commodus has given himself up to chariot racing and licentiousness.
Okay. Sure. I think that these are so light on the details that they present more questions than they answer.
Really? You decided not to believe Dio now, have you?
No, I'm not saying that I don't believe it. I'm just saying that, you know, the good bits have been epitomed. So,
yeah, and it is very black and white, this presentation of Commodus.
Yeah.
That he not only that he tried to rule and did it badly, or he made mistakes, or he was unfair to certain people or cruel, but just he just went off and did his own thing and took no notice.
Mm.
He kind of gave up his right to be emperor, is what they're implying.
Okay, so what was the downfall of Perennis then?
Yeah, well, if it were going well, then of course it all has to end, and it really only lasts a couple of years. Perennis comes unstuck because of incidents in Britain and things that should really, in a way, have nothing to do with him. So in Britain, the people's involved in a kind of constant struggle, and this is particularly marked in Commodus's reign. But a general there, Ulpius Marcellus, brings an end to this in 184 CE. Commodus gets a title, Britannicus.
Mm, despite the fact that he wasn't there at the time.
Doesn't really matter, does it?
Okay, all right.
Remember, he's still very young. He's only, 23? At this point, the British troops decide to make somebody else emperor. Now, we've seen this in the past where troops just decide to acclaim one of their generals as emperor. And they put forward a man called Priscus. He, in fact, refuses with the great words from Dio, "I am no more an emperor than you are soldiers." I like that put down.
Yeah.
"You're useless soldiers if you're trying to make me emperor." Dio says then that these soldiers were very angry and they took that out, having been rebuked for their insubordination, they take it out on Perennis. And they select, and this is a great phrase, 1,500 javelin men to send to Italy. So they send all these people to go and attack Perennis. The soldiers get to Rome without anybody stopping them, and there they were met by Commodus. They blame Perennis of plotting against Commodus, and Perennis is very quickly put to death. Now, Dio says this is largely under the influence, or Commodus is under the influence of Cleander, one of his freedmen advisors.
Mm.
This is always bad from the senatorial writer point of view if a freedman, the son of a slave, in an ex-slave himself, is advising the emperor, having far too much influence. And clearly Dio thinks that Perennis didn't deserve this. It was kind of unraveled all without any of his doing.
Mm.
The Augustan history claims that Perennis actually had done something to annoy the British troops, in that he had replaced the people in charge of them, the legates. By this point, equestrians are usually what we would think of as bureaucrats.
Yeah.
That's pretty much their position. They are often very high up imperial bureaucrats. So it's like putting people who know how to do paperwork in charge of a legion.
Okay.
Yeah. Not really a great move.
So the troops wouldn't be that happy with that.
Mm. So there may have been more motive. The way it's presented in Dio seems really quite irrational in some ways, that they want this guy to be emperor. That doesn't happen. So they go to Rome and accuse the person who's running the empire of being in a conspiracy against the emperor. Yeah.
And sending 1,500 javelin men all the way from Britain to Rome. You know, essentially just taking an army into Italy up to the emperor's doorstep.
That's potentially a declaration of civil war.
Sure, you've got to cross the Rubicon on your way.
but it's not the way that it seems to map out.
Yeah.
Because Commodus kind of takes their side.
Okay, so that's the downfall of Perennis. Now, we've mentioned the man who kind of takes his place at that point as being Cleander.
Yes, look, I've mentioned Cleander is a freedman. He's an ex-slave, and he's kind of an inner courtier, so he's a powerful secretary to the emperor. And this feels like a blast from the past of almost the Julio-Claudians. This used to happen under emperors like Claudius and Nero, that we'd have what are very low in Roman society traditionally, ex-slaves, rising to power in the imperial household. And it was a great novelty then and frowned upon by people like Tacitus and Suetonius.
Yeah, the senators must have hated this.
Absolutely. And of course, we're not really used to it after the good rap that the five good emperors get. The implication is that they didn't do this.
Mm.
This is why the Senate approves of them. But Commodus is going back to the bad old days when emperors allowed this social mobility. Which, by the way, when we talk about this and we get this entirely negative view from our sources, you know, social mobility is something that we claim to admire and try to promote. And so this may have been what Roman emperors were doing. Certainly, they're not just getting their advice from this very small inner circle. It may be an indication they don't trust the Senate rather than, oh, they're wanton people who will take advice from lowly people.
Mm.
After all, these are usually Greek academics, really. They're intellectuals. They're people who have been well educated.
So slightly biased there, okay.
Well, I'm biased, yes. as an academic, of course. Now, we don't know too much about Cleander to be very positive about him too, because, of course, these people are usually after power too, by the only means by which they can get it, which is by trying to work the emperor like a puppet. And Commodus had had a previous freedman in the inner circle, but Cleander replaced the previous one, Sauterus, in 182. And 4 years later, Commodus was referring to him as my nutritor, the person who feeds me, entrusted with the care of my bedroom and my person.
Okay, so somebody quite close and personal.
Very. Cleander is one of those people who, and this is going to happen more as the empire gets older, with actually selling off positions in Rome. So this is one of the things that Gibbon thought was responsible for the fall of the Roman Empire.
The fact that you could get to that point where you could buy your position,
so
not earn it.
This kind of corruption, or not be born into it, indeed.
Yeah, sure.
So that includes, you know, being the governor of a province, getting into the Senate, military commands, becoming a procurator, who are usually in charge of financial affairs. And as Dio says, in a word, everything. So, for example, by 190 CE, by 190 CE, there were 25 consuls in a single year. Now, this is not quite as bad as it sounds, because for a long time, in order to give more honour to the Senate, given that they really don't have as much power as they used to under the Republic, they, instead of having two consuls each year, they would have new consuls each month, but certainly more than two a year.
Okay.
And there'd be two main ones for the year.
So this is what's happened here. You got 12 months, so that's 24 consoles if there's two serving each month.
I don't know where 25 comes from.
Well, the 25th one is Commodus. 25th one is Commodus, the most important one.
Just to have his name on the rostrum, I suppose.
For the year, yeah.
Yeah, and then two per month.
And so all these people are paying for the honor, sorry, aren't they?
Yes, this is the motivation for this.
Checks made out to Cleander.
Previously, exactly, Cleander's getting the benefit from this. Previously, it had been a kind of way for the emperor of making the Senate feel better.
Yeah.
More of you have had this honor. You couldn't get this under the Republic.
Now it's revenue raising.
Yeah, exactly. Cleander might have been in charge of the building that was going on, which was mostly a bath building, which is kind of fitting with the image we have of Commodus as being someone who enjoyed himself.
Mm. That isn't something that Commodus really seemed interested in, unlike, say, Domitian or Nero, if we want to paint him with the same brush. They put their names on quite a lot of things when they were building them.
Commodus is not uninterested in projecting his own image, but not in terms of naming buildings. Cleander seems to have, according to works like the Historia Augusta, really had a bad influence on Commodus. There's a lot of uncertainty. The Praetorian prefects get changed all the time. And by all the time, I don't just mean once a month.
Mm.
So you've got no job security. Apparently hourly and daily. Is he just trying to get through everyone? So they've all been prefect. I mean, they'd have no time to settle in.
But is this paranoia setting in as well, maybe?
It could be, couldn't it? It's an indication of what we would regard as some kind of mental illness, that you're so paranoid that you trust someone for a few minutes and then decide you don't trust them anymore and it's going to be someone else.
Mm.
Mm. Historia Augusta also really uses this to condemn Commodus, that Cleander could only be so powerful because Commodus is not very clever. That because Commodus isn't very bright at seeing through Cleander, Cleander is able to consolidate his own position and get rid of other people. For example, Commodus's brother-in-law, Burrus. Burrus was telling Commodus too much of what was going on. Cleander couldn't have that. So he charged Burrus with a conspiracy against Commodus. Commodus believed it because he's not very bright. And Burrus was executed. Along with Burrus, a lot of people who tried to stick up for him were also got rid of. So Cleander's kind of clearing the way in this account from the Historia Augusta, making sure nobody can threaten him in his position.
Right. So this is just another purge by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it is a purge, but it's a particularly nefarious one because it looks like Cleander trying to make sure that his position's unassailable and that he's kind of the only person left for Commodus to trust.
Mm.
Okay, so even family members are not trustworthy. Predictably, the Praetorian prefect, a man called Ibutianus, falls foul of this purge of Cleander. Cleander put himself in that position. This, again, is, you know, ex-slave becoming Praetorian prefect. It's a bit of a leap in terms of Roman status. And he also has two other Praetorian prefects handpicked by him. Now, this is not normal. Usually there are only two Praetorian prefects, which is kind of mirroring the old Republican system of having two of lots of things, including consuls.
Mm.
But this time we've got three. And as the Historia Augusta says, one of them is a freedman with the title bearer of the dagger. So that's Cleander's reputation, that he's an assassin, he's a killer, he gets rid of people. However, he comes to a sticky end as well.
Yeah, so making this many enemies and having the Senate against you, having probably the Praetorian Guards against you and anybody who thinks that they might be getting your nose out of joint, Cleander must have had a big list of enemies.
Yeah, but according to Dio, it wasn't the soldiers. Clearly, Dio is expecting the soldiers to take up against him. I guess the Praetorian Guard, perhaps. It was the populace. This is in Dio 73:13. And the reason for that is that there was no food. There was a shortage of grain. There was a famine. And who's the person actually in charge? Well, it's Cleander. So he's the one who's going to be blamed. And of course, if he's got a reputation for taking money, for thieving, as Dio puts it, then he's the one who becomes the target of their anger. So Cleander meets his end because of a protest at the horse races, where, of course, we know Commodus spends all his time, where the people annoyed by Cleander send in their kids They send in a crowd of children who are told that they have to say Commodus is wonderful, but curse Cleander. And then because it's a crowd, crowds always dangerous in Roman society, they start to chant the same thing as these children. And we're told Commodus was so terrified, he was ever the greatest coward, that he had once ordered Cleander to be slain, and likewise his son, who was being reared in the emperor's charge. The boy was dashed to the earth and so perished. This is so horrible.
Wow, yeah.
And the Romans, taking the body of Cleander, dragged it away and abused it and carried his head all about the city on a pole. They also slew some other men who had enjoyed great power under him. So it was really sudden. Mm. And it just seems to be about the fact that Commodus will just go with the crowd. The crowd have decided they hate Cleander, so he needs to please them. This is definitely a sign of a bad leader, of a weak leader, who will just do anything to keep people happy.
So at this point, rather than getting somebody else, a third, a fourth person, transition gradually into a role of power behind Commodus, you get Commodus taking some initiative at being the emperor, even though he's not going to, we know that he's not good at it. There's nobody acting in his place from now on, is there?
Well, apparently not. Nobody gets blamed for it anyway.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, in a way, when he had Cleander, he had someone to throw under the wheels of the bus.
Chariot.
The wheels of the chariot, indeed. So somebody to blame. But maybe the feeling from that crowd was that he needed to be in charge. They're tired of having these substitutes and they kind of want the emperor to take some initiative. Or maybe that, given that Cleander was so good at getting rid of people, perhaps there really is no one left for him to trust. So he takes on that responsibility himself. Finally, very belatedly. Now he's going to have nobody to blame but himself.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in iTunes. Please leave a review and help spread the word. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, we take a closer look, and it is a bit too close for comfort, to Commodus's vices. But until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.